Before we get started, here are three tools to grow your business from my sponsors, starting with Shopify. Do you have an idea for an online store and need an easy way to get started? Or do you have an online store already and want to finally grow your sales? With Shopify, you'll set up your store in minutes, you'll get professional themes to customize your store, you'll even get a mobile app to manage your store from anywhere. Check out Shopify.com. And when you need something designed, where do you go? Well, for a logo, a t-shirt, a website, whatever, I recommend 99designs.com, the company that recently won a People's Voice Award at the Webbies. Because when you go to 99designs and describe what you need, designers from all over the world will work and create custom designs just for you. You'll give them all feedback, and you'll get even more designs. When you're happy, you only pay for the designs you want. I've used 99designs, and so has Timothy Ferris, and Adidas, and Shopify, and TiVo, and many other Mixergy interviewees and viewers. Check out 99designs the next time you need anything designed. Finally, what happens when customers call you? With Grasshopper, you have complete control of the experience you give your callers. You can set up multiple extensions, you can adjust voicemail greetings based on time of day, you can have your voicemail transcribed and sent to you. It's all up to you. Grasshopper.com. Here's the program. Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart, and had a little bit of an issue today. Today's guest, the one who I had scheduled, wasn't able to come. She had a family emergency. But I got an email from a viewer who said, check out this kid. You have to have him on Mixergy at some point in the future. The article was about Christian Owens, a 16-year-old who earned his first $1 million within 2 years. So a few minutes ago, I Skyped Christian. I asked him if he would come on and help me out and do this interview. He said he's a Mixergy viewer and agreed to come on and do this interview and help me out. So Christian, thanks for doing the interview and welcome to Mixergy.
Hi, yeah, happy to do it.
So you started this business, and we'll talk about what the business is in a moment, but you started the business when you were 14 years old?
Yeah.
Wow. The business is called Mac Bundlebox. What is Mac Bundlebox?
Mac Bundlebox is it's a software promotion company. So we do deals with Mac software developers to offer their apps and their software in discount bundle promotions, as we call them. To the public, so we might sell 10 different applications that separately you buy for $500, and we'd sell them for $30.
Wow. Now, this is very similar to a program that I've seen online before. I think it's called Mac Heist. Is that where you got the idea?
Kind of, but we had, I've been a Mac software developer before that as well. And just developing little applications, and gathered some friends who are in the Mac development community and said, what do you think about sites like Mac Heist and things like that? And the general response that I got from the developers was they didn't really think it was fair on like the development community, so the developers weren't being properly compensated for the apps that they were putting in. So I decided that I'd make a Mac Heist kind of business model, but make it fair for both myself and the developers of the applications.
How is yours more fair for the developers than Mac Heist?
So Mac Heist don't reveal a lot about what they do, like on a commission and like how much they're giving to the developers. But from what we're able to gather from talking to people who've been in them, it tends to be Mac Heist will pay the developers a lump sum of money to be in the bundle, whereas we pay them on a percentage basis of however much the bundle makes.
Ah, I see. Okay. And what are some of the apps that you've had in the bundle?
We just done one recently. We had things like Speed Download and Yummy Soup and all One Password. We've had One Password and hundreds of great Mac titles we've been able to work with.
I think One Password alone is worth more than $30.
Oh yeah, most of the applications that we work with are worth more than however much we're selling the bundle for. I mean, we just did one for $39, and one of the apps in there was worth $75.
So, all right. So here's my vision for this interview. I want to learn where the idea came from, how you how you launched the first version of it, how you got your customers, how you worked out the deals with developers, and basically how you built out Mac Bundle. And then later on in the interview, I want to talk to you about the second business that you launched, Brancher. But let's give people a preview of what it is. What is Brancher?
Brancher's a contextual, behavioral, and geographically targeted pay-per-click advertising service. So we take publisher websites who sign up to us and advertisers and match the advertisers to the publishers in a real-time basis.
Okay. And I see someone in the audience, Latchy G, is saying Mac Heist raises money for charity, and no one's trying to bring down Mac Heist or disagree with their business model. We're just saying you saw a different approach to doing this. So
yeah, we donate a percentage of the bundle to charity every time as well.
Okay,
10%.
All right, so let's go back a couple of years ago. You come up with this idea. What's the first thing that you do?
Pretty much, I'm the kind of person who has an idea and then they want to do it straight away. So it was the kind of thing where I thought of the idea, registered the domain name, put up a holding page with a sign up for like email updates, and wrote a press release and sent it out via a service called PR Mac. And the reason that I kept pushing with the idea is after the first press release, we got 3,000 subscribers, 3,000 email subscribers in the first like 2 days, to our way of doing things. And after that, after the initial influx of traffic and press and stuff we got from that, because obviously at this point we hadn't done any deals with developers, we didn't even know if it was going to work. But then we just started emailing developers, seeing if they were willing to be in a bundle, provide us with their applications, and they'd be taking this much commission from each sale.
Let's go a lot slower here because people are asking for details, and I know I want to know more about the details. So
yeah, sure.
Mike B in the audience is saying 3,000 subscribers came into that landing page, put in their email address, and registered 3,000 people just from a single press release?
Yeah, well, there's a service called PRMac, PRMac.com. And I know the guy now after submitting every press release with him. He's called Ray. And basically he's built a service. It's a press release distribution service for Mac websites. And he's made an amazing community of people who are just willing to promote an idea if they think it's good enough. And so you submit your press release and he'll help tweak it and edit it and make it the best it can be, and then it just gets distributed to, I think it's 2,000 media outlets, and then it just got picked up from there.
Okay. And was this the first time that you submitted a press release for one of your ideas?
Yeah, I think this is the first time, yeah.
Okay. So you just knew about this site, you said, let's give it a shot, and you promoted it how? What was it that was the draw in the press release? Why would people want to come out and see your site?
We kind of just explained that we were going to provide, as Mac Heist did, we obviously didn't promote them through the press release, but we wanted to provide low-cost software, huge discounts, and we were going to do it fairly for the developers. And it seemed to be the fact that it was going to be fair for the developers is what all the sites kind of latched onto and thought, especially the Mac sites or the Mac development sites. Kind of latched onto that and then said, yeah, we'll repost about this because we're happy to support the development community.
So now I've done over 300 interviews with entrepreneurs. And what I'm seeing over and over again is the ones who've had their businesses work out will just toss up anything at first. It doesn't have to look good. Very often I see in their faces that it's ugly. Yeah. It doesn't have to have all the functionality. I interviewed the founder of webs.com. He said he just put up a list of features and he didn't even have them for years after he put those up on the homepage. He just said, we're going to have these someday. So yeah. What I'm wondering is, and I see that that's what you did too, I'm wondering, did you ever do this before for another idea, create a landing page or create an idea and nobody cared and you weren't that fascinated with it afterwards and you moved on? Or was this the first time you took a shot at anything?
It's the first time I've taken a shot at anything with a landing page or a period of time before that where we marketed the idea of doing something. So anything before that we'd done had been things like, we'd made this, we put it up, it's for sale now, go buy it. But before this, we kind of tried to build an interest or a following, kind of a community around it, and that worked obviously really well.
What else did you try selling in the past?
I have a Mac software company called The Dream Apps. Mm-hmm. And we built an app called Dream Capture. It's a video recording app, and another one called Invola, which is our best seller, which is an invoicing application for small businesses. And we didn't really do, we did marketing obviously, and we did use Twitter and Facebook and things like that to market the products, but we never did the kind of get people excited about the idea before it happens. And I think businesses lose out a lot if they just decide to, like, the first thing that the consumer sees about the product is where they can buy the product.
If the first thing they could see is where they could buy the product, then you lose customers?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's much more healthy for a company or a brand, or it certainly was in our case, if you can develop a following or a bunch of people that are interested in an idea, and then just grow that base of people to start with, and then try to sell your product to them.
I see. Okay, I gotcha. So before we did this interview, I saw a comment by a guy named Riyadh in the chat room who was asking about your motivation. And now as I'm talking to you, I'm wondering about that too. Where's this motivation coming from? Why would you, as a 14-year-old, launch this company, and as a preteen, it sounds like, launch all these other ideas?
Yeah, it wasn't money. I mean, 14-year-old don't really have much use for money, or especially the amounts that we're talking about. But it was just the drive to do something and make something that other people could use and build something that would be in front of all these eyes. And it was just something that really appealed to me. Something, I mean, I followed Steve Jobs for a number of years and think he's amazing, even despite the antenna problems and the way he handled that. But just following other entrepreneurs and seeing how they do things and just really want to make something great that people could use and be happy to use.
What is it about Steve Jobs that inspires you?
Just his ability to make a great product, like one after another great product. And it's just the Steve Jobs mentality of, it doesn't have to work good. It doesn't just have to look good. It has to work good as well.
Okay. All right, so you came up with this idea. You started to get a following of people who said, yeah, we're interested enough that we're going to give you our email address, and we're waiting for you to actually put this together, and maybe we'll be customers. Next step was to go out and get developers who would give you the software that you would then sell in a package at a discounted price. How did you do that?
Pretty much all through email. So we'd use things like Mac Update and all these websites that list all Mac software and downloads and stuff. And we just go to the developer website, find their contact information or their support information, and we just send them an email, tell them exactly what we're doing, just be clear with them about how much money that they could make out of this, like the following that we got at the minute and the press that we've been receiving and stuff like that.
Okay. And what was the reception when you started sending this out? Was it a bunch of no's and then you finally tweaked your email and got yeses, or was it a quick yes? What was it like?
I mean, at the start we started sending this, we obviously wrote a copy kind of thing that we were sending to everybody. And it was 3-4 paragraphs long, and it just detailed the percentage you might get and how much following you got at the minute. And we got maybe one or two yeses from that, but it was when we tweaked that email and made it more personal for the developer, so mention the application name that we want to use and the kind of people that have already picked up on this and the apps that we got before. It's only then that we started getting, like, every other email was a yes, and I started having to turn people away.
I see. So there was a stock email that you sent out and you got some yeses from it, but it didn't do that well.
Yeah.
You took the yeses that you got from that and you created a second email that was customized, and you referred to the ones who said yes, and you talked to the person who you're emailing more personally, and that's what got you the good yeses, the flood of yeses.
The personal touch, like mentioning the developer that you're contacting, say that you really like X feature about his app and think it'd be a appealing to the community. Once you personalize the email and personalize the way you're talking to the people, rather than just sending a copy that thousands of other developers are getting, we just found that that led the developer to trust us more into building a great product.
So Andrew SG and a couple of other people in the chat room earlier were asking if there was any friction from adults. Did people even know while you were sending these emails that you were a teenager?
Not really. I mean, I didn't mention it unless it was asked. I didn't lie about it but it wasn't something that I mentioned unless I was asked. And when it did come up later, once people had had an experience with the company and with what we were doing and figured out that we could be professional about it and I wasn't just a kid who was online trying to scam people or whatever, once they figured out that we were being professional about all this, then they were happy to work with me regardless of my age.
What about the legal paperwork? A few people were asking about that.
In the beginning with Mac Bundlebox, we didn't have anything. Like, it wasn't a company. We didn't set up a limited company over here or an LLC in the States or anything. And then it was only after that that we registered a company called the Dream Network, which we were going to use for all of the ideas and everything over here. And we found a great accountant. We found great lawyers. People just willing to help us, because obviously a 15-year-old starting a business or a 14-year-old starting a business isn't their usual client. So you have to kind of find people who are going to be like respectful of that, and not only that, they're just going to try and work with you rather than you be their client.
So you're saying that first you got the audience, then you got the partners, the software vendors, and then you went out and you got the legal paperwork to work together with them.
No, we actually, in all the time that we've done the bundles, we do it now, but we've never had a contract with any of the software vendors.
Oh, really? It's just by email. If we make this deal, would you join us? They say yes, you make the deal, they service it, you send the money, that's it.
Yep, we've never had a problem with receiving licenses. They've never had a problem getting paid. It's just all been based on trust. I mean, a couple of the larger deals now, we obviously do sign contracts and non-disclosure agreements with the things before it happens, because we tend to take a very Apple secretive kind of thing to it before we do a promotion. But before, maybe 6 months ago, we'd never signed a contract with a developer or a vendor.
Weren't you worried that maybe they wouldn't satisfy your customers, or that there'd be an issue, or maybe they demand more money? Was there any concern over that?
Not really. We just tried to make everything as clear as possible as what they were getting and how much they get per sale, and we had no guarantee on what sales that they would get, and we made it very clear from the beginning what their responsibilities were and what our responsibilities were.
All right, I see a comment here in the chat room by Dan Blank. He says, what color is the sky in his world? This is one of those stories that seem way too perfect. So is this all as perfect as it sounds? Where are some of the issues?
I mean, the Mac Bundlebox story is pretty perfect. I mean, we started an idea with nothing. I mean, we spent like $100 buying domain name, getting hosting, and it kind of just took off. I mean, the Dream Apps before that, we had little to no revenue at all. We built all these applications. I'd put all this time into building them, and like not much has come from it. Before that, I did like web design, like get a client, build a website for them. It was just like standard stuff. But until, like, Brancher was the first thing that didn't go 100% to plan once we started it.
Okay, let's hold off on Brancher then till later. Let me check this out. First million within 2 years, that's first million in sales, not profits, right? That's what the article is talking about?
Yeah.
That's 1 million in sales. What goes into the bottom line? What's your net margin?
Quite a lot of that goes, because we're fair to the developers, about 60% of that goes straight back to the developers.
Okay, and then so you keep 40%, roughly 400,000.
Yeah, and then of that 400,000, obviously after the first promotion, we started doing advertising for the deals. We probably spend about 5 to 7% of the money that we generate on advertising and marketing.
Okay, so altogether, let's say 10% in expenses after you pay out your developers, that means say 40,000. That leaves you with 360,000 over the last 2 years in net profit.
Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations, I was going to say. Congratulations. Let's keep going with the story. The design of the first site. Everything that has to do with Mac seems to need to look beautiful. Even little tiny apps that on Windows look blocky and have that standard dialog box look to them, on the Mac they look so stunning you want to print them out and frame them. What did your first website look like? The one that was just a landing page getting email addresses.
The landing page getting email address was pretty horrible. It was basically some text that said Mac Bundle Box, maybe not even 100 words about what we were, and then an email sign-up box. And we hadn't done any special design. It was all vanilla buttons, and just we hadn't even designed a logo. We hadn't even made it images. It was just all text, and I think we centered it on the page to make it look a bit better.
You think you did what? You centered it on the page? That was your design
touch. That was our design touch.
People are going to hear that are going to say, that makes a lot of sense. That's the way I should launch. And then when it's time to launch, they'll say, that doesn't really represent me well, or it doesn't really communicate professionalism. And then they'll back off and they'll wait until it's perfect. And by the time it's perfect, it'll be too late. So I'm wondering, how did you get past that? When you were looking at that, a guy who now has incredible design, who loves the Mac, and so you love the design of the Mac, and you admired Steve Jobs for his design eye. Yep. When you looked at that, how'd you get past the design issues?
I mean, we had to get the balance between an amazing design, which is going to make, wow, let's just sign up anyway, and people who are going to look at the site, read the site, and sign up because they're interested in the site, rather than, wow, this has amazing design, I want to see what they come out with. So I think it was that balance that kind of made this so popular with such a poor design.
Okay, what was the next version of the design like? And by the way, I see here, I'll come back to the audience in a moment. What was the next version? So this is just the email collection. What was the next thing that you launched?
So the next thing after the email collection was the very first sale that we did, which, if I remember rightly, it was 15 applications for $49 with a retail value of about $550. Okay. And we by that time, obviously, we'd run the email sign-up for a couple of weeks while we'd been organizing this, getting developers, and we'd had time to put into a good design. And we'd try and design it as much towards the Mac as we could, because obviously that's our target audience, and people on the Mac clearly they clearly love the effort and the detail that goes into everything on the Mac. I mean, if you look at an icon on the Mac, it's not just a block. It's, if you zoom in, it's so much detail. We tried to reflect that, but my skill level wasn't amazing, so I wasn't really happy with it, but we launched anyway.
So you were still designing the next version, and it was just a page that showed off the 15 apps that you had, that explained what they were, that explained the deal most importantly, and let people buy.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. And what did you design it in? Was this a WordPress? Was this standard HTML?
No, I designed it in HTML, designed it in Photoshop, sliced it all, coded it in HTML, and then coded the payment and license delivery stuff in PHP.
When you look at it now or think back on that first page now, what do you think?
I think we've come a long way. I mean, from something that was just that I could make now in like 15 minutes to something, the deal pages that we have now, which take days and weeks to design and get absolutely perfect and like intricate detail on every button and word. I just think the added effort that we put in really now really reflects what the company has become and like how much effort that we want to put into every bundle and how the design is important to us. And it just reflects like what we are as a company.
So this is what a couple of people in the audience were saying, Dan Blank and Riyadh. They're saying that there's nothing about you that feels like a 16-year-old. How is it that you can be this articulate? I mean, when I look at me now, I'm stammering and stuttering and having a hard time getting the words out. And I do these interviews every weekday. I know when I was 16, I wouldn't be comfortable with some stranger calling me up on Skype and saying, jump on and do an interview with me. Where does this come from?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know. I mean, over the last year, I've obviously got better with increased press and interviews and talking to people and become more confident with that. But before that, I would like to say I was pretty normal for my age, but I honestly don't know where it comes from. I mean,
the more you talk, the more comfortable you get. Is that what it is?
Yeah, the more, I think that's with anything, the more you do it, the more, the better you get at it, and the more comfortable you become with talking to people, and the more it becomes routine and something like that you're used to doing rather than something that's so foreign to you.
When I graduated from school, I didn't want to take a job while I was building my first company because I was worried I wouldn't have enough time to launch that business and give it the time that it needs to grow it and so on. You're doing this while you're in school, while you have obligations to your parents, while you have obligations to do kid things after school. I don't even know what you do. Karate class, do you skateboard, do you do anything like that?
Play guitar, paintball, stuff like that.
So how do you fit in running a business while you're doing that?
Sacrifice social life, that's one thing. Just work every hour you have spare. I mean, you're not going to get somewhere of any success if you don't put the work in. And so I was coming home from school, working like from the minute I got in to the minute I went to bed, working in the mornings, working weekends, just to get this idea that I had, work holidays, work through the summer, things like that.
Do you do anything with the money to kind of impress your friends? In other words, I remember I had a business in high school, had a little bit of money. I had pizza delivered into school to impress my girlfriend in the cafeteria. But I had a little bit of money. I was able to do stuff like that. Do you do stuff like that?
Not really, no.
No.
I mean,
you might want to steal that really. Line. That worked pretty well.
Yeah. Something right. I'll have to remember next time.
Let me know. Taking orders. How did you do that?
Excuse me?
How did you take orders? So you have people now coming into the website. You have the developers. You have the product that you're going to sell them. You talked about how you designed it. You talked about how you got all that. What about the orders? How did you take orders?
I can't remember what we did on the first one. Oh, we took orders via PayPal. We used their instant payment notification API to ping back our servers and then send out the licenses. It's all done in PHP.
And the developers give you the ability to generate licenses yourself, or you have to ping them and they give it back to you?
We worked in three ways. We worked in one way where they'd give us a list of license codes, and then we'd just assign them to people when a sale was made, and then at the end of the promotion, we'd give the list back. We worked on another one where we'd have a URL and we'd ping that URL and that'd send a license back, and then we'd send it out ourselves. And then we had another one where we'd ping the URL and they'd send it from their servers along to the customer.
How automated was this?
Completely.
It was completely automated. So even if you're pinging the URL or you're drawing from a list, it's all happening automatically for the user.
Yeah, they'd place their order, and within 2 minutes, they'd have all their licenses.
Oh, wow. Okay, because I bought from a competing service. It wasn't MacHeist, but I can't remember who they were. And it took them a little while to send me the licenses. And I kind of had the feeling that maybe they were emailing them and then forwarding me that email. You developed that yourself?
Yeah.
Wow. How long did it take you to do all the development for that first version, for the first sale?
I mean, I was quite naive in the fact that I didn't realize how much work it was going to be to compile all these emails, and especially when the load started to get up and then it broke. But it probably took about a week of the 2 weeks that we had the 2 weeks that we had of like organizing the bundle, it probably a week of that was solid development.
All right, I want to ask you about marketing, but first let's talk about Noah Kagan launched something called AppSumo. Basically what he's doing is he's his website? He's taking web apps, he's bundling them the way that you are, and he's selling them. I'm looking at his numbers because he also donates to charity, and he says publicly how much he's donating to charity. They're not that impressive. They're not as impressive as your numbers. What do you think he could do differently?
Try the option with the community. Try and sell to your previous customers, because it's going to be much easier to convince a previous customer to make a sale than it is to find a new customer. Don't take any of the money when you do a bundle. Don't take any of the money, the profit from that bundle, out of the company. Use all that for your next bundle.
I see. To do what with? Because it doesn't look like it's that expensive to do a bundle. What do you do? No,
we bought ads. That's okay. What we did, we bought lots of ads.
What kind of ads work for you?
This kind of leads into Brancher, but we tried search advertising, so Google, the standard Google AdWords. We tried direct advertising, so banner ads on blogs and stuff, and then we tried the AdWords banner ad service. And we spent a lot of money on that for not a lot of return. But if you do it right, we figured out if you do it right with AdWords, you can get a lot of return for what you spend.
What's doing it right? What worked?
For us, what worked was be extremely specific. Like you don't have to target the masses to make a sale. If you target niche markets and you target very specifically to a person that you want to make a sale from, then you're 10 times more likely to make a sale if 3 people click that ad than you are if like 200 people click the other ad.
I see. What about an affiliate program? I saw that you have one of those. I think you pay out $1.50 every time somebody sells one of these bundles. How did that do?
Yeah, extremely well for us. So we obviously made on the last bundle, we made 200 sales through our affiliate program. So obviously using the use of an affiliate program is both, it can lead to high earnings for the publisher who's displaying information about your service. But for us, it's the highest form of like performance-based advertising that we've done.
And what do you use to organize that to make sure that people were getting that they were getting the right accounting, that they were getting paid, and so on?
We didn't launch the affiliate program until quite recently. So some of the stuff that I've learned from running Brancher has gone into that affiliate program.
Okay. So how much did that first sale make, that first bundle that you described with the 15 apps?
I think we made about $40,000
in revenue from that. Okay. Yeah. So actually that seems in line with what Noah's doing with AppSumo. So probably as he does more and more of these, he'll keep building up his customer base, and past customers will buy in the future, and he'll reinvest whatever profits he gets into buying advertising. And that's how it goes, and it just snowballs and snowballs.
Yeah, it just keeps going and keeps. Yeah, you just have to get a customer base who are like a willing community behind you, who are going to like enjoy the things that you put out. And as long as you put effort in, there's going to be people who want to buy it.
The second one, how much did that do?
I think the second one was about, I mean, I'm going completely off numbers in my head right now, so this might not add up at all. But I think it was about 110,000.
Oh, okay. All right. And so what'd you do differently the second time?
Nothing at all.
What about unlocking? I see today that, or the more recent ones, had an unlock where you were offering a certain number of apps as part of the package, but if more than a minimum number of orders came in, then you'd unlock another program for people. When did you come up with that, and how effective has it been?
Oh, we haven't actually done that. We've never done an unlock model. for our bundles. I know Mac Heist have, and I know the Mac update promos have done that in the past. We've, until now, I mean, until the last couple of promotions, we've never been getting the, like, the volume of sales required for us to say if we sell. We've never had the consistency in the volume of sales to say if we sell over this amount, then we'll unlock this app.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. What about having a deadline, saying that these apps will only be available at this price for a certain amount of time? Do you have any sense of how effective that is?
I think it helps us to, because we do that for every bundle. We usually do between a week and about 18 days for a bundle. And I think that it just keeps people interested, because if they're able to go back to the site once and then go back to the site a month later and it's the same deal there, it just doesn't give them an encouragement to purchase it now. Mm-hmm.
Have you tested having different limits or different time limits, maybe 1 3 weeks, another 2 weeks, to see if that drives more people in?
Yeah, I mean, the first one, the first promotion we did was a month. So that was the very first one. And then I think we've got increasingly shorter the amount of time that we run the sales for since then. So the second one, I think, was 3 weeks. And then we've just got shorter. The last one we did, the shortest one we've ever done was a week, and that was a Christmas bundle that we did. But we think we've found the sweet spot, and it's between 10 days and 2 weeks.
I see. Let's see what else I've got here. If you could go back to that, to the first time you launched it, and tell yourself, do this one thing, do this one thing differently, what would it be?
Social.
What is impact? What would you do with it?
Things like leverage the power of Twitter and Facebook and Google Buzz and all these other services and StumbleUpon and Dig and everything. Just put a real emphasis on that. Perhaps we've started doing it now, but perhaps reward customers and users for sharing the applications or sharing the bundle or tweeting about the bundle. Reward them for it. So give, incentivize the sharing of the site via social.
How would you do it?
I mean, this last bundle that we did, we offered an extra app for free if people connected their Facebook account and sent out a Facebook message.
Ah, I see. Okay. And how many people did that?
I think it was 11,000 people.
Oh, wow. And how many people in your mailing list?
Now, just shy of 50,000.
Shy of 50,000?
Yeah, 50.
Wow. So I do interviews all the time here, and entrepreneurs will give me their numbers. Some have even had their CPAs confirm their numbers with me by email. I'm wondering, why is there so much openness? Why are entrepreneurs willing to reveal their numbers? Aren't you afraid someone in your school might say, hey, if Christian can do it, I can do it, and copy you?
I mean, I encourage competition. I mean, if there was no competition in the space, if Mac Heist didn't exist, if Mac Update didn't exist, what would encourage me to put out a great product each time? I mean, if there was no competition, then why would I need to put this much effort into design or put this much effort into marketing? If there wasn't that competition, then I wouldn't be doing that, and that would lead to a worse service from me, and it just wouldn't. I just prefer the way the company runs when you put in all this effort in and you put in the time into the design, you put in the time into the way the website feels and it loads and the speed it's loading at. And
can you measure order increase? Can you see your orders increase when you get an article like the one that I read that said a 16-year-old earned his first $1 million?
Yeah, we use things like Google Analytics and Chartbeat.
And you see the increase as soon as the article hits.
Oh yeah, we see spikes in sales, and if we become a trending topic on Twitter or we get on the first page of Dig, we definitely see spikes in sales, and that's one of the data that we can collect from, like, where our website has been featured or if we've been on Dig or Twitter or anything like that. That's how we learn and we do our marketing in the future based on the data that we collect from that.
What did you collect? What did you learn from being on Dig?
So from Dig, we learned that we learned about what sites that we should encourage people to dig. So obviously when people visit, we get like a million visitors every time we do a bundle. So we obviously have this amazing power to say if we get a Gizmodo article or a TechCrunch article about our bundle, we know that we should promote to the, say, million people that visit our website, we know that we should promote the dig button for that article rather than the dig button for our site.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, I see. What's been the best source of traffic for you?
The unofficial Apple weblog tour.
Yeah, that's a great blog.
That's been the best one.
It's the first one I subscribed to when I got my Mac.
Yeah. So that and Macworld.
Oh, I haven't subscribed to that.
Yeah, you should.
All right, I'll give that a shot. Have they been sending you a lot of orders? How does that compare to 2OWL?
It's about the same. I mean, we didn't get featured on Macworld the first time, but in subsequent bundles, they've provided a good amount of traffic.
Who's managing the business now? Because we're going to talk in a minute about Brancher, but I'm wondering who's managing Mac BundleBox.
Me. I still do it all.
So it's still you reaching out to developers. It's still you developing your own site and making sure that you're pinging the developers and getting the license code and taking the orders and making sure the PayPal didn't go down.
Yep.
And you're still using PayPal?
We experimented with a credit card processor on the last bundle we did. And it turned out that that is one thing that people wanted. Quite a lot of people don't trust PayPal, big corporate company. So we decided to just go with a credit card processor last time as well as PayPal, give people the option.
I see. Okay. And the website is macbundlebox.com?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So where'd you get the idea for Brancher from?
So Brancher kind of stemmed from MacBundleBox. So with all the money that we spent on advertising, I think we spent probably like $50,000 in our first year on advertising for MacBundleBox. So it was the lack of return that we were seeing on this advertising and the lack of ability to target towards a specific person rather than a specific search term or a specific website that inspired me to start Brancher.
Okay, and what was the vision for it? How were you going to make things different?
We wanted to make a service that allowed people to target ads to a person rather than a website. And we wanted to make, we knew services like this existed, but the kind of price range that these services were after, it was large corporate companies that were able to use them, large online stores. So we wanted to make it like, we want to make it available to everyone. The way Google AdWords is, anybody can go and sign up and place a search ad. We wanted to do the same thing for behavioral targeting.
So give me a sense of who would want to use this and who they'd be targeting.
So just an example of the kind of customers that we have at the minute. We have a lot of online stores that use us. So they're able to target people who, say it's a travel company who are selling holidays. They're able to target to people who are looking for a specific holiday or a specific flight or a specific hotel. Who the person's been looking for it rather than placing the ad on a website that's about that.
I see. So it doesn't matter where the user is. If they're interested, if they're the right user, they'll get the ad.
Yeah.
And didn't this exist before?
It did exist before, but it wasn't available for everybody to use. It wasn't available for like you or I to just sign up, pay $20 into an account, and start using these behavioral targeting technologies.
I see. I didn't realize there was such a big barrier to entry. Who were the big players at the time?
Google offered the service. Yahoo offered the service. But again, it was for sites that had a spend of over like $4,000 a day. Mm. So it was the kind of services that are out of reach for like smaller like online stores and people who are just starting their first business. But these technologies are so valuable in online advertising that someone needed to make a service that allowed anybody to use them.
So what was the first thing that you did after you came up with the idea for this business?
First thing, we made a prototype of the system. So we started researching technologies and the way that we could do this, because obviously in running any ad network, you go through a huge amount of data. And running a behavioral network, you have to save all that data. because we have to learn from people's like browsing history and stuff like that. So we had to figure out ways to save all that data and what was going to be the cheapest option for us in terms for like servers and database software and things like that.
So you built the database, and then what was the next thing that you did?
We built the database, and then we actually built the thing that was going to serve the ads on the website, trying to make it as fast as possible, because obviously we're doing lots of calculations and there's algorithms and stuff that we have to run. And we want to try and keep this time that people are waiting for an ad to load on a page down to the minimum.
Okay. And how'd you get the publishers?
We just started emailing sites the same way that we got developers for Mac Bundlebox. We used that method to get our first load of sites for Brancher.
What kind of sites tried you out at first?
We didn't really target any big sites because we knew we couldn't handle the traffic that they bring. So we kind of targeted small like WordPress blogs and people on Blogger. So sites that might be getting maybe 100 hits a day, we'd want to manage their advertising.
And the advertisers, how'd you get them?
The same way. Yeah, we just emailed people and told them about our service and how we thought that we'd be able to bring higher returns on investment for the amount that they'd place with us. We offered things like double your deposit. So if they put in 10, we'd give them 20.
You give them $20. If they put in $10, you give them $20 worth of advertising.
Yeah.
In the system. Okay. And how many sites did you launch with?
We launched with about 50 sites that we were serving ads on and probably 3 or 4 advertisers.
And 50 sites, was that enough? Or are we still talking about just a first, is this kind of like the landing page that you had for Mac Bundlebox?
We did start with a landing page, so people who are interested in the site and people who liked the idea of being able to use these behavioral targeting and earn more from their site, or on the flip side, have a higher return on their advertising. We did a site like that, but it was more like reach out to sites and reach out to advertisers to try and get these people to sign up with us.
How'd you know who was on the website? How'd you know who the users were?
For
Brancher. So the whole idea behind Brancher is to say Andrew is a Mac user. He may not be on a Mac blog like the unofficial Apple blog, the unofficial Apple weblog, but wherever he is, we should be serving him an ad about Apple. How did you know who I was?
Yeah, so basically our system learns. So all the websites, every time you visit a website with a Brancher ad on it, we collect information about you. So we know that say you visit a travel blog, we know that you visited a travel blog, and then say you read an article on a tech site, we know what the article is about. We use the contextual technologies that have been around in other ad networks like Google and these other sites that were allowing people to do like cheap advertising anyway. We use these technologies to kind of build a profile around a person and what they're browsing and the sites in our network that they're browsing. And then once we have that profile, we can allow advertisers to target towards that profile.
How long has the business been around?
We started in January 2009.
Okay, and I know you also are available on the iPhone and the Android. How's that compared to the web?
We launched the iPhone and Android SDKs and the ability to advertise on them and publish ads for them. We launched that maybe 2 months ago, so okay. We're still new in that space, but it's proven really well. I mean, mobile is definitely the way forward. So the iPad, the iPhone, and the other devices that are out there. But mobile is the way forward, especially like hyper-targeting of things like geographical location.
So someone in the audience, I don't remember even who it was asking about Mark Bao. You partnered up with Mark Bao. Mark Bao's another guy who as a kid was just launching companies, who I just kept reading about him on TechCrunch and reading about him in the papers. And how'd you hook up with him, and what's the responsibility breakdown between the two of you?
Me and Mark partnered about a year ago on Brancher. So they had been around for a few months. And Mark was starting another advertising company called Adaptance, Mm-hmm. And this was a similar thing to what we were doing, but it brought in a social aspect of advertising, so targeting people who use social networks and share stuff online. So we kind of, I'd known him for about 3 years before that as well, but it was about a year ago that we kind of put our brains together and said, why compete with each other when we can merge our two ideas and just make this company even more successful than it could be? So we got to work and developed a new version of the system, which we launched maybe half a year ago, that just leveraged more technology in the targeting. It just made it smarter, faster, and easier to use.
Is it a 50-50 breakdown in ownership?
It's 55-45.
Who's the 55?
Me.
Oh, wow. All right. So what's the deal with teenagers running businesses? We were talking about that too while we were waiting for you to get set up. We were talking about it in the chat room. That I'm seeing more and more of it. Why?
There's a few reasons. I mean, it's so easy to do. You don't need extensive amounts of knowledge to set up a company, especially online. You don't need money, hardly any money at all, to start up a business online. And as long as you put the effort in, and I think especially if like teenagers are putting in the effort about something that they're passionate about. If they feel strongly about something, they'll put the effort in.
But I see adults who have the same access to technology, that have fewer barriers, who are struggling even more to bring in revenue. Why?
It's just, you have to have a willingness to change. So as the market changes, you have to change with it. So there's obviously a focus on social right now, and there's a focus on geolocation and geolocation social networks. So if you're willing to accept all these new things regardless of what you think about them, and you're willing to go with the trends that are happening, then you're going to succeed, because you're going with what's happening now, what's popular now. If you adapt the business to that, then you're going to be able to succeed better.
I see. Okay. And I see Lackey G in the audience, help me pronounce your name, saying that we were brought up on technology. That's true, that you've had technology as long as you've lived. It's just been a part of who you are. You're more comfortable with it. And you're saying, in addition to it, you're willing to adjust. And he's saying it's Lackey. That's the way to pronounce his name. All right. So what's next?
I want to continue with what I'm doing at the minute, perhaps not the software promotion side of things as much. I want to kind of focus on the advertising and growing that side of things into something incredible. Then, I mean, I come up with ideas all the time and end up just doing them, staying up until crazy hours in the morning and doing them. But
you
for
mean
now,
in addition to Mac Bundlebox and Brancher, you might have another idea at some point. You just go and you build it, and you've had this happen to you.
Yeah, I mean, about 3 weeks ago, I came up with an idea for like a One Riot kind of search engine, for like social search engine, but specifically for Twitter trending topics. And I built that in like 48 hours. I don't think I slept, because I kind of get focused on something, and then I'll just get an idea, and then I'll just run with it.
See, developers can do that. Non-developers have to go out and figure out who to hire, how to partner up. How did you become a developer?
I don't know. I think one day, I think I was about 12, I might have been 11, and I kind of went to my parents and said, how do you make a website? And they were, well, why would we know? So I kind of just went online and learned about HTML and CSS and how to build a website, and it just kind of interested me how you can, with especially with the internet, how you can start with completely nothing and come out with, at the end of it, with something by just putting in effort. And like, if you were going to build a company to do with like consumer electronics or something, there's that side of it, but you also need the materials, and you have to buy all the stuff, and you have to like put it together. But with online, it's just the putting together that you have to do. You just have to take the knowledge and the resources that are available for the most part for free and put it together.
You hired your mother?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
That was a misprint.
Okay. Who did you hire?
mainly support staff. So I think people like customer support, that's really important to us, especially at MacBundlebox. So people to help with customer support and keeping the customers happy.
So where do you find these people?
I'm not a fan of interviews and doing things like that, or like resumes and CVs for that matter. I don't think that you can like really display a person's ability to, especially things like design and development. You can't really display a person's ability to do these kind of things through a resume. So I tend to use things like Twitter and Facebook and sometimes our own site just to say that we've got this position open and we're looking for these kinds of people, and just give us an example of what you do, and if you're good enough, we'll hire you.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, it's great to meet you. I see that there are a lot of people here in the audience who are loving this interview, who are wanting a way to follow up with you. Is there a way for them to say hello afterwards or ask you questions if they're teenagers who want to get into business too, or adults who want to get into business?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at @the_dream. I need to change that. It's a horrible Twitter name.
What is that Twitter name again for the transcribers to get it right?
It's @the_dream.
@the_dream. Okay.
Yep.
All right, check out @the_dream. Check out MacBundleBox.com, and Brancher is spelled Brancher, no E, Brancher.com.
Yep. And ChristianOwens.com. ChristianOwens.com has links to all my profiles and social networks and everything, and you can contact me there.
And ChristianOwens.com. And yeah, I see that you've got one fan here in the audience who just keeps saying, Andrew, please ask him, how can I say hello? How can I get in touch? I've got a question. So he's really happy that I asked you that question. Thanks for doing the interview. And really, thanks for coming in at the last minute like this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's cool. Been a dream of mine to be on Mixergy. So
rock on. And thank you all for watching. Bye.